It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
Hello, everyone. It's another week is here, and it's time for the New American Dream Radio Show. The lottery numbers for tonight are 9. 22, 11, 52, 70, 74, and 89. If anyone can identify these numbers, we'll do something for them. You know what we'll do? We'll send them a free copy of Johnny Moon, autographed by the author, Mike Palachuk. Now, let me explain a little bit about this contest. Somewhere in there, there's probably a date. Somewhere in there, there are probably some years that were important to one of our co-hosts. And somewhere in there, there was a number that was particularly important to me personally. It was my draft lottery number back in the Vietnam War days. Fortunately, it never got used because I had a college deferment and then they ended the draft. Anyhow, that's just a little something for people to think about. And hey, everybody likes to get free stuff. So try it out. See if you can figure out what those numbers mean. And if you missed the numbers, just go back to the beginning of the recording, play it again, and you'll get it. My wife and I have been watching the original Star Trek series recently. It's amazing how good those episodes still are. Oh, they're a little bit dated in some areas. There are some other problems with them, but you know, the technologically, they're certainly not very current. But they were really first-rate episodes. They really were. Mike has just reminded me, my chat, that I needed to tell you how to respond to the contest. Well, all you have to do is send an email to radio@newamericandream.info and tell us what those numbers mean. And maybe we'll put it up on the website, put the numbers up on the website so you can read it and try to figure this out. We'd really like to give this book up. Today, the worldnewstrust.com, one of our sponsors, woke up to discover their site had been taken over by something that talked about freeing Palestine. Apparently, hackers who've been taking over a large number of websites got to World News Trust and their associated site, airlight.us. I got it fixed, but it was quite a surprise. These hackers get more and more sophisticated no matter how good we make our website security, people get in there. It's a funny thing. World News Trust, as I mentioned last week, it is a sponsor for our show, and we really appreciate their help. It's very useful. They have a great site. They provide good news, a good source for news, and naturally some opinion too. Many of their stories are original. So check that out, worldnewstrust.com. Let me tell you again the numbers that for this contest. That was 9, 22, 11, 52, 70, 74, and 89. And don't forget, that's for a free copy of Johnny Moon, which is Mike's latest book. It's a very good novel. He's been getting some good press about it, and we really are hoping that some of our listeners will pick it up. There's a link to buy it from the website. And I'm afraid I've been talking more sales than anything else this evening, but I've used up my time, so I'm going to hand off to that famous writer, the American writer, Mike Palachuk.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing? You talked about the draft. I remember it was when the war ended, the Vietnam War ended, I think I was a senior in high school, and I probably said this before, but my friends and I, we really didn't talk about the Vietnam War, and we talked about sports and girls and, well, Nebraska football and drinking. You know, we just didn't think about it. And I remember the war ended, but I know for pretty much a fact that all of us would have went in. We didn't question the war, didn't do anything. Luckily, I remember it was English class someday, and some hippie, you know, we called him hippies. He stuck his head in the door and said, "The war is over." And it's almost like all us dumb shit sitting in English class almost had to say, "What war?" But luckily, we were very lucky we didn't have to go. Well, anyway, tonight we're welcoming back Doug Drame. He's a poet from Los Angeles. And also Richard Flamer from the Chiapas, Mexico Catholic Worker. Richard is an old friend of mine from Omaha. He is running the Chiapas Mexico Catholic Worker, and right now he's on a trip up north, up to El Norte, to do construction work. He's a construction work expert, among other things, and he's in the United States doing construction projects to earn money to get through the winter. So tonight we're going to be speaking to Richard at the Des Moines Catholic Worker. So tonight we're coming to you from Vancouver, where Len Osanek is, Fort Lauderdale, where Chuck is, Duluth, where I am, Los Angeles, Doug Drame, and Des Moines, where Richard Flamer is. Well, it's now time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American-Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. Because we know the winds of our own totalitarian society are freezing the land solid. It's a tortured tundra. We aren't that far from the Soviet Union, and it's getting cold, especially up here in Duluth. I got sweatpants and a sweatshirt on. Finally, we can make a difference by reading and writing the truth, because the newspapers and television and radio are now so obviously not telling the truth, just like back in the Soviet Union. At least those folks knew that Pravda and his SDA told lies, but we still don't really know that. But anyway, it's a perfect ironic situation, and the only real way for this to happen was that we hit rock bottom. And you know that those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Sadly, you know, seriously, some are actually dead. They've killed them. They do that in the United States. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with the roll of their eyes. And we all know that happens. And if you ever bring up something uncomfortable at the Thanksgiving table have to do with politics, you know that they won't let you do that again. Either you won't bring it up again, you'll talk like about football like you're supposed to, or you won't come back to Thanksgiving dinner. We are there at the bottom, at the beginning, so let us begin. Okay, here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
You say Iraq. I say Iraq. You say towel heads. I say they're people. You say insurgents. I say they're patriots. You say, you call us liberators. I say
that
we're
album
invaders.
Is in.
You call our soldiers heroes. I say they're criminals. You say Iraq. I say Iraq.
Who are they? They say it's going to rain. They say you should not eat that stuff, but you should eat this. Who the hell are they to tell me what to eat and drink and whether I should take my umbrella to the game? Because they also got the United States into World War II and Korea and Vietnam. Have you ever met a they? You probably did not know it, but you could feel it. It's cold, like if there's a ghost in the room. It feels like the creeps. It feels like it feels in a scary movie just before some head appears in the dark window. You might have felt it sitting next to Uncle Reginald at the Thanksgiving table. They did 9/11. They control the world. They killed JFK. They killed RFK. They killed Paul Wellstone and Martin Luther King Jr. They control what we see on TV, radio, and in the newspaper. They. This sentence is brought to you by me, sent out to you, so that we might become we, in the hope that someday we can conquer they, that someday we will decide ourselves whether or not to eat broccoli or bomb the world or kill Martin Luther King Jr. Now I'd like to bring on our first guest, Doug Drain. Doug, I think, has been with us twice before. Doug is in Los Angeles. He's a poet who has fought the good fight through poetry. And that reminds me kind of, well, Charles Bukowski. I don't know, you know, I don't know much about him, but I did read some of his books, and I really got the idea of fighting the good fight from the letters of Charles Bukowski, of how he went to bad jobs and he stayed in these rooms, and he just did it. He did the writing, and he just did it. And that's kind of, I don't know, I kind of have a picture. I don't know Doug Drain, but I have a picture of that in my mind. Doug Drain's most recent books in print are Rock and Roll Jizz from Propaganda Press, Los Angeles Terminal Poems 1971 to 1980 by Covert Press. Also two online chat books, The Speed of Light and Stoned on a Poco Stick. Doug has been awarded Penn Grants in 1987 and 1991. He's been nominated for several Pushcart Prizes in the last few years. He lives with his wife and family. I believe it's Ashland. He lives in Oregon. Ashland, Oregon. Hello, Doug. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Mike. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good so far.
Okay. I'm always happy when I can hear you real well, and that's that makes me happy. You have simple pleasures here. Up here in northern Minnesota.
Everything else, yeah.
Would you like to read us a few poems and give us any commentary you'd like to sprinkle in there? If you'd like to do that,
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have about five here. Actually, I have six. I hope I can get them all in. I have 10 minutes, do I, or 15?
You do, yeah. Yeah, we can go till
okay,
about,
good.
Well, it's to me, I got 3 minutes to seven. We can go till about 10 after, a little more.
Okay, cool. The first one I have is called $125 a Year, and here it goes. If I can't make a living at my art, am I selling my soul by working at something I hate in order to eat or feed my family while I pursue my art and life? And does it matter if I make minimum wage or become financially solvent from my despised labor? Who and where is the judge who judges such things? Was I writing better when I was going hungry, sleeping on park benches and strangers' floors, stealing from supermarkets and walking the streets. I speak to you. I speak to you reading this, you hearing this, you of the privileged class, you elitist minority, you who can read, reading books and magazines of literature, you who own computers, while three-quarters of the people of the earth, we are the elitist. We who can afford to write and read in the comfort of some individual corner. Even if you happen to be on the bum when you read this, you have a dumpster or a garment box or maybe a tree to lean against, or at least you have that. You may say that everything is relative on the earth, but there is nothing relative about starving and oppressed human beings. You know and have known poverty? Well, I don't think any of us can really claim to know poverty. Yet let me know the sweat and blood of my labor, and whatever that may be, even if I end up hating the machine which produces it, knowing full well it is the very same machine which is responsible for the destitution and ignorance of people who populate three-quarters of the earth. The next one is called War Mall, and I wrote this after an experience I had in the local mall here shopping. Okay, War Mall. There could be time enough and even energy enough, but the will stumbles back into unrepairable memories. The lungs have inhaled marijuana, and the day is dark and it's moving like a snail, uphill in fog. Everywhere there is a preparation for war, where the big countries bomb the little countries. The mall is full of robots called American consumers, blind and dull, as door jams. I forget where I parked my car and almost desperately search one row at a time and find my beat-up 92 Ford Tempo at the end of the fifth row. Some days I can't walk into a mall without being overwhelmed by the mentality of war. There is something blatantly ostentatious, something bellowing greed and arrogance that disgusts me. On other days, I am better. I can come with my wife shopping for family and friends and be a regular guy. Yeah, it must be the ganja or the gloomy Oregon day as I speed down the freeway for home like an army deserter who's running from the front lines, and more than happy to be one. The next one is called Bombing Babylon. It's kind of short. Okay, Bombing Babylon. Does it matter that the walls have been blown away? A child's mangled red tricycle, the only thing left standing. How many people witnessed, averting their eyes, the toxic gas and burning bodies climbing up into the sky, with no regard for life, sowing death in the hearts of the living. Okay, next one is called The Ego Jacking Off the Dead. If art does not tear the sham from all political thinking and lead to a truth to free the mortal material soul, if art does not lead to revelation or revolution or beauty or insight or hilarity over the pitiful human race. If it does none of these, art is only the ego jacking off the dead. Okay, next one. It's called Daddy-O. And see how much time I have here. Okay, now Daddy-O. I would like to go up the size of the heads of all the preventers of unbridled concepts and moral outrage about the dying of the light. And Daddy-O welds the blade of monetary worship, drawing financial conclusions based on the body count and the seemingly endless string of sellouts who parade like baboons smoking cigars with their pitiful beet-red asses into the gelling gene pool of war-mongering Daddy-O. Production lines of the spiritually deformed humanity selecting and sorting the newest in brain implants. We send spaceships out and build more, train the explorers to be conquering politicians and butchers who are down on their knees with their sucking mouths to Daddy-O. See. Next one is called I Refuse to Sign the Funeral Book. I did not sign the funeral book because I had much earlier signed on the line of sky, light, and spirit, signed the book of life. But as I was finishing the E on the end of my last name, the bombs began falling, people screaming, and wartime is all time. Who's keeping body count? Your blue eyes are bleeding, and everything is poison. And the stockpiles of discrepancies of love and desire and greed bleed into dark harbors of sightless, flickering depths of blackness, blackness and skies thick with suffocating gray, choking smoke, and hallucinations. I will not sign the funeral book, despite the dark blood gushing from both my eyes. Now, the last one is kind of a little lighter than those. I thought I'd end with something a little different than what I've been reading. And it's called Coltrane Mowing the Grass. Working up to the edge of my backyard, southwest corner facing California, the mower spurting down the slope, weeping for oil, I catch sight of the chocolate-brown, short-haired cat from down the street, dancing along the fence. Coltrane is playing on the disc player from my open kitchen window, and I turn off the mower and sit down to watch the cat intently, my body full of its subtle movements, and the rest of my senses consumed by that other cat, that dead cat, Coltrane. My wife is yelling something at me from the porch, and our dog is barking at the cat, but the cat dances on, and that genius cat, John Coltrane, wails and wails on and on. And I go up on my porch to take a break. My wife hands me an ice-cold beer, and I seriously consider hiring the kid next door to finish mowing the grass as I sit down, turn up the music, close my eyes, and throw the world the finger. Okay, that's it.
Those are great. I got to ask you, are they new or are they old?
Well, these are old. Most of these are old. The newest one would probably be the first one I read, which is $125 a year. But most of them are pretty old. Yeah.
And the mall one that must not be too old.
Oh no, that's about 3 years old. Yeah.
Hey, I spent some time in county jail and federal prison, and sometimes there's
time in jail. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, sometimes there are certain jails that I don't miss, that I do miss. I mean, they weren't so bad, and I right. kind of wonder, I'm leading it, I kind of wonder if you might miss the old days when you were on the street and writing. Is there any part of you that misses those days?
Yeah, there's a great part of me that misses those days, really, because there appeared to be more conflict. I think writing or art comes in kind of a conflict within yourself and a reacting to the outside world and your experience. And, yeah, I miss a lot of that, and sometimes I have to, because I write a lot about the past, because I'm more peaceful now, more content in my life, and there's not as much attention in my writing now. It's going in another direction, but yet I'm able to draw up a lot of things. I've written a lot of things recently, very anti-political things and stuff that I didn't think I still had in me. But I look around at the world and it creates in me a need to write about it and to be outraged and to put that outrage down on paper and hoping other people. I get it, and most people do, I think, you know, today, because of the craziness we're living in.
You say you told me before that you've been writing most of your life, but about how many years have you been writing poetry, would you say?
Oh, wow. I think I first started writing, first thing I ever wrote, I think I may have mentioned this to you before, it was rock and roll lyrics when I was around 15, 16, something like that. And I think the first poem I wrote, I was around 17. And I'm 68 now, so how many years is that? That's a lot of years. So, yeah.
And you're still going, and it's not a struggle, is it? It feels good to still be writing, doesn't it? I can tell that.
It feels great. It's who I am. I can't imagine, you know, not doing it. I mean, there are periods where I don't write anything. I mean, I have friends that write every day. I'm amazed by that incredible talent to be able to do that. I can't do that. I don't write every day. I write, I maybe write two or three poems a week, and I'm working on short stories, and I'm working on a play now, and I write different kinds of things. I try to write all the time, but it's kind of hard to do.
And can you tell us finally where people can get your stuff?
Well, the bio that you have basically is it.
Okay.
That's about it. And there's a lot of magazines and a lot of online sites that it would take me, you know, would take me another 15, 20 minutes to mention. And,
right. Well, how about your email? Can you give out your email address?
I sure can.
Or would you rather not?
No, that's fine. It's
okay.
It's cddraim, and that's at charter.net, cddraim@charter.net. And if there are any publishers out there, I'm trying to get a major book of poems published. I mean, to well over 300 pages, which is kind of unheard of now with a situation in small press, underground writing. But if there's anybody out there that wants to publish me in a big way, I got a lot of stuff.
Sounds good. I hope somebody's out there. Well, Doug, thank you, and we'll see you next time, and have a good night, okay?
Okay, Mike, you take care.
Yeah, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Indian names for white guys. Sits on sofa. Drinks his beer. Eats his chips. Mows his lawn. Drives his car. Goes to work. Sits on sofa. Goes to bed. That's about it. For this, we rape the land and kill the people. We kill anything that moves to protect our way of life, eating while watching TV in the dark. Oh, yeah, that's right. Indians have some names for white guys.
This announcement is from the real church. Ezekiel, Jehovah, Jeremiah, Zizaphat, and Zuzaphone. Fook is that? Fook is he? Hell if I know, and his magic sheep show. Someoneth soft, somebodyeth, walking past the town fountain, and this golden lizard spoketh something about figs and donkeys and Caleb's funky brand new something-somethingeth. Say what? What's that got to do with anything? Somebody's genealogy scrapbook project, it sounds like. Some family history from forever ago, and you memorize it, and what? What's that got to do with you today? He got up and doeth, diddeth, this and that, on some Tuesday morning 2,000 years ago? Whoa, no kidding. Real church. Well, we're actually real. Read the pages of the Nuclear Resistor. Here is your gospel. Real history. Things happening today. People in trouble today, in prison today. People poor today. Take some bread to a poor family and have lunch. Real communion. People struggling today. People needing a miracle today. People looking for an effing burning bush today. Real church. If God is real, she surely approves. She's been waiting us 1,000 years for a real church. Realchurch.com. Licensed by nobody. Sanctioned by nobody. It's real. It's relevant. It might actually mean something. Who knows?
Tonight, our special guest is Richard Flamer with the Chiapas Catholic Worker, although right at the moment, I believe he is in Iowa. Are you there, Richard?
I am, and
good.
Yes, I am in Des Moines.
You are in Des Moines. Okay. You're at the Catholic worker community there?
I am. Amongst old friends, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, good. How long will you be away from your Arizona roots or whatever?
Actually, we're in Chiapas, but Mexico.
It's Mexico. I'm sorry. I was thinking it was just above the border or something. I got mixed up.
We're clear down by the Guatemalan border.
Oh, by the Guatemalan border. Okay.
Yeah, we're actually just an hour and a half away from Guatemala.
Wow. Okay.
My mistake. And I'm up here doing construction work, actually.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I used to be a carpenter and grew up in a family of builders, and I am a master electrician as well.
Uh-huh.
So I come up and work for money and go back down and use that money with the farm that we have, the Catholic worker farm we have.
Okay, good. So is it a several months trip?
Yeah, actually, this will be, I intend to go back about the 15th or 20th of November, and from there, I have an indigenous wife who's mm-hmm. from there, a Zapotec indigenous woman, and she's, you know, she has this strange opinion, and she thinks that since we've already built a community center and a clinic and a school, that it's time we have our house. So.
Uh-huh.
So we're in the middle of doing that now.
Okay.
We have a concrete block machine, and we make our own block and brick, and we use migrant labor. That's part of what we do at the farm with the Catholic workers, to have a temporary respite for Guatemalans and Salvadorans who are heading north. In most cases, in our case, we try to hire the young men if we have the money to make concrete block and brick. And they can camp out and earn a little money and keep going north. In the case of the women, they're... are enormous problems on the frontier, the southern frontier, and in many cases it's much more dangerous than the northern frontier, especially if you're poor and are Indian. The indigenous, especially in Guatemala, make up the majority of the migrants passing through, and there are 36 Indian languages in Guatemala, and roughly 60% of the Indians do not speak Spanish. So when they're forced out from no work and so forth, they head north and try to learn a little bit of Spanish along the way. But with the increasing problems in Central America, especially with the gang problems, which are another American invention, that largely from the 80s, the people who were expelled out of, who are originally from Salvador or Guatemala or Nicaragua, who were expelled out of the U.S., formed gangs, and were in gangs in the U.S., and then they took them down, and so it's another export of American troops or American culture. And the gang problem in Latin America has been, in the usual Latin American fashion, they've passed these stringent laws so that, for example, if you're in Honduras and you have a tattoo, any tattoo, you can go to jail for 2 years with no trial.
Wow.
Those are the sorts of laws they're passing in Latin America, in Central America. So it's forcing the gang kids up to the border. And there's now this no man's land between Guatemala and Mexico that's filled with these gang members. And they commit extortion, in some cases, in fact, over in Tapachula, which is a main crossing, border crossing, because there's a train that the migrants can climb on to head north. The gang members will often jump on the train, and if the migrants won't pay them, then they throw them under the train. There's, in fact, a brand new hospital with 60 kids who've lost limbs from that extortion.
My God.
And we get, the people that we get, by and large, are young girls who've been taken in as sort of gang whores. And they're 12 to 15 years old. And when they get pregnant, then the gangs throw them out. And so those are the girls who come up the road, and we try to take in 2 to 4 of those girls at a time, help them have their babies, and try and place them in communities around where we live.
Huh. Well, with the things that you see down there, whatever's going on in the United States must seem pretty tame.
By and large, yes. Yes. And it's important to remember that there are things like the racism that many Mexicans up in the U.S. or migrants or actually Mexican-Americans complain about the racism here. But believe me, the racism directed against Indians in southern Mexico is way worse. It's so awful, you can't imagine it. It was only 7 years ago that the first Indian or indigenous judge was appointed in Chiapas. And the reason we knew that was that my wife and I kept trying to get married for almost 6 years. In Mexico, one has to get married through the state before you can marry in the church.
Uh-huh.
And we went to 5 judges who refused to marry us. The last one, the 5th one, actually saying, "We don't marry between the races."
Wow.
And then the 6th judge was the first Indian judge appointed for Chiapas, and he married us on his first day in office.
Wow.
What a good change. But the racism continues, there are some things that get magnified 10 times over. On the other hand, they say that Mexico's a barbarous place, and yet they don't have a death penalty. And there wouldn't be a Troy Davis execution in Mexico. Huh. And with the drug dealers and all the pain that they cause and so forth, the Mexican government and the court system believes that they can be redeemed through prison, so that they refuse to extradite drug dealers or anybody else to the U.S. if they're facing a death penalty anywhere.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well,
so
it's a very interesting contrast that you've spent a good amount of time in both of these worlds, so you get a very a different picture of our own surroundings by reflecting them against what you're telling us about Chiapas.
I find that coming up to the U.S. Makes me crazy. Sometimes I think I'm a big dummy. I just don't understand the lives that people lead up here. The lives that we lead, the life that I lead down in Central America and Mexico, in Chiapas, is a life of great spirit, great hope and faith. The poor are always around us, and we live in a culture where somebody in the community dies and the people around us all gather and get enough money to bury them. We, in the last 2 years, four bodies have come back to our little community from Arizona, where the people were killed trying to cross the border. There is no work where we live. Everybody works part-time, but they share. And there's a great sense of, just before coming up here, I did a small electrical job and put in receptacles and lights into the little school that's in front of us where we live. And that makes us eligible for computers from Microsoft.
Oh.
Turns out that there's a program to put computers into all the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great thing. On the other hand, the kids in that school don't have enough to eat. And
yeah.
I know it's important for the government to think about computers and to think on those things. But at the same time, they're sort of missing out on the basics. You know, like, why don't you have feeding programs? So instead of asking the government for help, I come up here and raise money, and we're going to go back down and start a feeding program.
Well, you can certainly be a lot more effective in giving the help directly. You don't end up with many levels of people siphoning off the funds, so there's nothing left.
Right. And the other thing that I find, this is your typical bureaucratic problem, but in the city of San Cristobal de las Casas, which is a fairly large city in Mexico, there are 96 NGOs, non-governmental organizations.
Uh-huh.
Of that, four are doing work outside the city.
Huh.
That is, four of them get out into the countryside. Now,
want to stay where it's comfortable.
Yeah. And a lot of them are young American kids, and they're idealistic, and that's great stuff. But, you know, try learning Spanish before you come down.
Yeah.
try working with the people, with the poorest of the poor. It seems to me, I mean, I was part of the first group that started a Habitat for Humanity in San Cristobal de las Casas. The first 2 years, we built 400 houses. The third year was turned over to the bureaucracy out of Mexico City, and they built 40 houses. Last year, they built 12. But now they have a staff of 8.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me two things are evident from my perspective. One, keep it small, and it works better.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about the bureaucracy. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that God gives us what we need, not necessarily what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to worry about giving up everything, because you'll get what you need.
Hmm. Well, I think that's a great philosophy. And I've actually seen that work in my life as well. Do you think that your experience in construction, you're as a tradesman basically, helped you to identify with these people that you're involved in helping? I'm as opposed
know.
To say being the white collar businessman or something.
I suppose that there's something to that, although I'm a firm believer in Peter Morin's sense of worker scholars, and I happen to have a bachelor and two master's degrees.
But I wasn't suggesting that you didn't have education to go with it.
I'm only saying that for me, it's always been important, the idea of praxis. And people do way too much talking. And if you're going to do some sort of praxis, then you better have some skills. And I was fortunate enough to have a father and grandfather who were terrific carpenters. And I learned the electrical trade along the way. And it stood me in great stead. And when I need work, I certainly have a work ethic and have no problem in going to work and making money. But at the same time, I come up and do work for Catholic workers, in some cases who have no money, and that's fine too. But it keeps me grounded in the sense that the people that we work with know how to lay concrete block. They know how to mix concrete by hand. And those are I know how to do that. I don't have to do that now. But I know how to do that. And that makes that makes us closer together. And, and a blue collar, I always sort of have this dilemma about, am I blue collar or white collar? I suppose since I live in the middle of the poor, I'm blue collar, but I don't think much about it anymore.
No.
the fact I think of that's... the matter is, living with the poor, these people have given me so much more than I could ever give them in hope and spirit and faith.
Well, on that extremely upbeat thought, I think we're going to have to wrap things up. I was wondering if do you work for other people? Perhaps some of our listeners might want to hire you for something on your next trip to the United States.
The best way is to drop me a note at my email, which is Flamer, F-L-A-M-E-R, Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, all one word, at hotmail.com. And drop me a note and I'll put you on my mailing list. I do regular mailings, which go out all over the world, actually. And then, of course, people could always donate. We're always looking for money.
I'm sure you are, and I can think of a few more worthy causes, or if any. So I really appreciate your visiting with us tonight, and it's really been a fascinating discussion, and I hope to talk with you again in 2 or 3 months.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and have a good night.
At the end of the day, remember that this day was brought to you by Operation Northwoods Spray Deodorant. With Operation Northwoods, the fog hangs in the air long after you've gone. Back a few decades ago,
I stumbled a little at first, but then I came up with some good things to ask.
In government, planned to carry out murders and crash airplanes and have fake news reports to fool the American people into invading Cuba. It didn't happen only because John F. Kennedy, a real president, was in office. But then the ones who liked the idea of Operation Northwoods killed Kennedy. And now we have fake everything, fake presidents, fake news, and fake wars. Oh, the killing and dying are real. It's just that everything else is baloney. Operation Northwoods, it hangs in the air. Chuck.
9/11. I'm sorry, folks. I had my mic on mute. I turned it the wrong way. 9/11.
Len, we might have lost Chuck. I'll read his. I'll do his ad. 9/11, anthrax, Bush, Cheney, Tom, Clancy Wars,
depression, toasters, automatic garage door openers. It's all there in the hunt for Fred October. Fred October. He's the man in the gray flannel suit. The man who ignored the world in order to build a home in the suburbs, get ahead in his job, and raise his family. And now it's too late. And his children now want to kill him. He let it all happen. He could have stopped it, but he had a pressing business meeting, a golf game. There would be plane crashes. Boom! Intense computer screen scenes searching for passwords to Google vital information. Tick, 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 tock, tock. And train explosions. Pow! Car chases and crashes. Screech! Bam! A sexy bar scene in low light. Ooh la la! He's Fred. Red October. The man in the gray flannel suit coming to movie screens everywhere this fall in October. Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. It's getting into hunting season. Talking about hunting season, finding scratchy socks for hunting. And just like he does every fall, Paul Larson sent his ant hunting letter to the editor of the Weekly Miracle. He knows he won't stop hunting, but, well, yes, he does. Maybe not this year. Maybe next.
Hello.
Mike, pick up with Ever See a Cock Pheasant.
Okay, I didn't even know I dropped. Sorry. Ever see a cock pheasant all stiff and beautiful, ever feathered, drawed, and painted, and even his eyes drawed in pretty? And bang, you pick him up. Bloody and twisted, and you spoiled something better than you. John Steinbeck, The Grapes of Wrath.
The 10-Point Norwegian by Paul Larson. Recently, 6 hunters were killed in Wisconsin, and another is now headed off to prison for life. Well, that's a start. I don't like hunters. They kill when they don't need to. I see a bunch out in the field in their bright orange dunce caps. I try to honk and flip them the bird while they raise their shotguns and salute. Used to be a hunter. Dad took me pheasant hunting back in the 60s. He was from South Dakota, had hunting in his blood. I bought an Ithaca 12 gauge with a ribbed sight, my own money. And then I really got hooked on duck hunting somewhere in the 70s. Ducks and geese fascinated me. I think because they came from somewhere else. They were migrating, passing through. The pheasants and me had only been just here. And one day, I downed a hen mallard in a slough, cornered her and tried to kill her off by holding her head underwater. I thought to myself, how stupid is this? For one, trying to drown a duck? You could be here all day. Secondly, trying to kill this bird, for what damn reason? So I let her up. She swam away to die someday, some way. But I walked away, headed toward the same. Threw the Ithaca in the swamp, or sold it, or left in the trunk of my car. I forget. I heard that later my high school group of friends would joke about free duck Larson and post duck Larson. I don't see them anymore. They were so pre-duck. Yes, I was a hunter once, a dumb guy. Probably still am. Dumb guys are the last to know. I've seen deer hung up in the front yard of somebody's home in town while little kids walk past on their way to school. I've seen hunters gloating over dead deer in the field, big brain-dead grins on their faces. I've heard measured defenses of hunting from guys who really should know better. And I've seen the Hunting Channel. Really big, really, really dumb guys whispering, pointing toward the bear or deer they're about to kill for no reason. Then later, going up and petting the dead animal like they just loved it so much they had to kill it. There's some sick psychology to hunting. Harvesting, they call it. You see something beautiful, majestic, but just beyond your reach. So you kill it. There it is. You own it. Put it on your wall. It's yours. Like the silver Hummer in the drive or Mary Jane from the cheerleading squad upstairs boiling bologna. A As you bathe in the afterglow in your new basement den, your feet propped up in just your orange socks, watching football on a screen the size of Vermont, no wonder this country won't last much longer. Probably a good thing. It's like when God handed out brains, the line was much longer than he had anticipated. And after a point, he still had the whole Midwestern United States to do. So he said, hey, guys, all I've got left are these orange mittens and these camouflage socks. Sorry, but they're pretty cool, right? You put them on. I can't see you. Here. Yeah, that looks great. No, really. And the dumb guy scooped up the orange and camouflage hats and pants and coats and said, let's get her done. No idea what it meant. Over Thanksgiving one year, my wife's son, daughter, and mother-in-law and I slumped towards central South Dakota to my brother-in-law, the realtor's place. On the way, I spotted this enlightened billboard. South Dakota rejects animal activists. Fur, fish, livestock are our economy. Those were both spelled A-R-E, by the way. Down the road a bit, like Burma Shave on a mental hospital front lawn, the United States rejects human life advocates. Bullets, bombs, caskets are our economy. I'm so proud to be an American. Well, no, I'm kidding. A while back, there was a photo in the paper of another Wisconsin hunter. This one's still kicking, who bagged a 28-point buck. Remember the song about the 30-point buck? No relation. Well, Hunter says in the article, as he holds the animal's antlers for the photographers, the deer's eyes hang half-closed and the tongue lolls out the side of the mouth, that he really seriously feels kind of bad about taking such a beautiful creature from the woods. Oh, really? Don't believe it, folks. He's a dumb guy wearing orange clothes with a deer head in his hands. He'll say anything to stay out of prison.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, volunteer Boy Scout lawn raker spies are about average.
Profiles and hearts. To those who have given or are still giving their heart and soul, helping us all have a better world, our thanks for caring. And remember, Mr. Byron does not teach American history in room 203 at 10 a.m. in Sheboygan. He didn't yesterday, he won't tomorrow or never. Mr. Byron doesn't know anything about American history. He does not want to. That's why he's been there for 33 years. If any of these names are not familiar, give them a Google search. And again, our thanks.
Paul Wellstone.
Helen Woodson.
Carl Cabot.
Mickey Z.
Leonard Peltier.
Richard Dolan.
John Judge.
Lori Berenson.
Bill Hicks.
John Boncor.
William Doubting Thomas.
Jim Garrison.
Peter DeMott.
Richard Gage.
Bob McElvain.
Norman Mayer.
Ralph Nader.
Tara Yeakey.
Dorothy Kilgallen.
John Ross.
May Brussel.
Larry Rosebaugh.
Roy Bourgeois.
Frank Cordero.
Daryl Rupiper.
And that about wraps things up this week. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. And be sure to stay tuned right here for Black Op Radio, coming up next at the top of the hour. We'd like to thank World News Trust for sponsoring us for the last couple of episodes and also for hosting our website. we'd like to urge our readers, go get a look at Johnny Moon. It's really a great book. And let me read once again those numbers that I started off, used to start off the show. Tell us what these mean. 9, 22, 11, 52, 70, 74, and 89. Identify the numbers and get a free copy, autographed copy of Johnny Moon. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.